Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. New England doesn't have a monopoly on ingenuity and entrepreneurial drive, but we've been at it longer than many parts of the world. That's what Scott Kirsner writes in the current issue of Yankee Magazine. The 80th anniversary issue focuses on stories about New England places and people who've inspired us. And Scott wrote about the long list of innovators, from people like Alexander Graham Bell and Edwin Land to the folks working today in biotech, life sciences, and robotics all around Boston. Scott Kirsner is the innovation economy columnist at the Boston Globe. His piece in Yankee Magazine is entitled Innovations and Ingenuity, People and Deeds That Have Inspired a Nation. And he's in the studio now. Welcome, Scott. Good to have you back.
Great to be here.
So we often talk about the modern innovation economy that's rooted here in a big way, but you remind us of all these wonderful older innovations that began in New England. Talk about a few of those.
Sure. Well, I mean, I often feel like our geography and our headspace is so absorbed with thinking about the revolution and the birth of the democracy and all the monuments to wars gone by and all the graveyards that we don't think enough about all the scientific and technical innovations. But every time that I visit an old building, I kind of am interested, you know, what happened here? Who were the previous tenants? I remember the first time I went out to the mill complex in Maynard, where digital equipment was headquartered for a long time. People forget that at one point, digital was the second biggest technology company in the world after IBM. And that mill, I think, was a classic New England textile mill where they made uniforms and blankets for Civil War soldiers. And so, you know, digital equipment is a big part of our history, the invention of the telephone.
Alexander Graham Bell was a BU professor, I learned from your piece.
He was. I'm a BU alum, so I always try to mention that. he also worked, you know, there was this incubator building downtown near Government Center on what was then Court Street, where Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison both rented space for a while. And it was upstairs from a telegraph equipment shop. So they had all these inventors upstairs thinking about, okay, what's the next big thing after the telegraph? And Edison didn't figure it out, actually, and left Boston after having a falling out with his investors. And he's known now as the Wizard of Menlo Park, not the Wizard of Government Center. Yep. But Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Watson figured it out. And, you know, it's still amazing to me today that we carry around the successors to their invention in our pockets today.
Yeah. I like it, too, that you remind us of the clipper ships of the mid-1800s, which, of course, were once the fastest, sleekest, and sort of most mesmerizingly modern ships that we had made right here.
Yeah, you know, when we think about FedEx today getting things someplace overnight, you know, the clipper ships paved the way for that. It kind of depresses me a little bit now when I visit East Boston that there is no museum of the clipper ships. There is no surviving clipper ship that's there in Boston. I feel like we need to fill that historical black hole at some point. Mm.
So fast forward to today, who are the natural sort of offspring of those inventors and innovators of long ago? Is it the bioscience whiz kids in Kendall Square and the new South Boston waterfront?
I think a lot of it is life sciences entrepreneurs. I mean, I think of someone like Robert Langer at MIT, who has his own lab there and works on a lot of medical devices and drug delivery systems, and has, I think, probably more patents than anybody walking around Boston today, or Michael Stonebreaker, who, you know, is inventing new kinds of databases and starting companies every other year. So we have a lot of serial entrepreneurs. We have a lot of investors. I just met with someone today who's an angel investor, and he's constantly looking for, you know, what is the next, what is the next great company, the next Polaroid, the next digital. And it got me thinking about the late Georges Doriot, who was really the first venture capitalist. He came here from France and was a professor at Harvard Business School, started what we consider the first venture capital firm called American Research and Development. And he was the one who actually put the initial money into digital equipment.
Hmm. So talk about the formula for innovation, because you have a sort of intriguing moment in the piece where you make the point that the formula for innovation in this region is not complicated at all.
Yeah, it's not complicated. You just have to keep at it for a while. And I think of it as this mix of universities where you attract research dollars and really experienced professors who know their field and inexperienced students who don't know the field yet and really don't know what can't be done. You've got the venture capitalists, you've got the patent attorneys, you've got all the recruiters and real estate agents who know how to help these new ventures find space and find people. And then you have, occasionally when you're lucky, you have the investment bankers that help these companies either get acquired or go public, which is kind of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Right. So there's the formula. So it's straightforward enough, but not so easy to replicate. In other words, sort of not any city in America could sort of say, we've got to sort of replicate what the Boston area is doing, right?
Well, I think you see visitors when you are walking around Kendall Square in Cambridge, you see these delegations from all over the world trying to figure out how to replicate it. And universities really are at the core, and universities that didn't just start yesterday, but like Harvard and MIT and Tufts and BU have been around for more than 100 years. And I think people miss the point of they're really good at attracting federal research dollars, and they have been for a long time. And so that's one of the things that worries me when I think about the future. It's, do those dollars from the Pentagon or those dollars from the National Institutes of Health decline? And they have been declining over the last decade. How does that affect, all this entrepreneurial fertility that we have?
Sounds like you're saying we shouldn't take for granted this ability to be a hub of innovation forever without sort of tending it and really paying attention to it.
Yeah, it definitely needs tending, and it needs money has always been the center of it. When you read about every inventor, every entrepreneur, it's that moment of convincing someone to put money behind their idea, even though it seems crazy. I mean, the one company I love that we didn't touch on is Technicolor. Three guys who just thought the movies ought to be in color and managed to sort of find the investors who thought like, oh yeah, that's
that
going to happen
sense.
At some point.
Yeah. Is there something about, do you think, the type of people that live here that make it possible? Because there's another article in Yankee Magazine's 80th anniversary issue on the Yankee work ethic. I don't know. Does this factor into that or not so much?
I think it does factor into it. And, as we head towards fall, and I hesitate to say it, winter, there you get these nice long work days and, the frigid days of January and February that keep everybody inside coding instead of outside kite surfing or mountain climbing. That is really helpful. And I think there's just a doggedness. I mean, I often see these companies that not just in biotech, but in tech too, where, you're dedicating a decade or more to transitioning something from the initial proof of concept in the lab to something that you could actually put in a computer or put in a flat screen TV or put in a human being in the case of a drug. So, there really is, if part of the Yankee work ethic is just not getting distracted by like what is the latest fad or fashion in
or
the business
fun.
World. Or fun. Although we should mention the first video game was invented at MIT, Space War. Right.
So what's exciting you most in this innovation economy right now? I mean, as you look for now and out toward the future, what do you wake up and really are thrilled to sort of go and explore and write about?
Boy, it's always like the latest thing that I've seen. I went to a party a week or two ago for the startup called Freight Farms in South Boston, which takes old shipping containers and turns them into perfectly self-contained farms where you can grow lettuce and tomatoes and beets all through the year. And then maybe just I have farming on the brain right now. There's a startup I saw called Provender that's trying to be a online market, sort of an online farmer's market, connecting restaurants that want to buy fish and produce and mushrooms and who knows what else with all the providers so that there are fewer middlemen in that transaction. So maybe we got it talking about farming and tending things, and I've got that on the brain, but those are just two that come to mind.
Really interesting. Scott, I mean, one of the things we've talked about on and off over the years here is, and you sort of touched on it a moment ago, and that is sort of how to perfect and how to pay attention to and cultivate this innovation economy. And one of the challenges that we talk about sometimes is really smart kids come out of universities and choose to go elsewhere, like Silicon Valley. What's your view on that? And to what extent is that something that needs to be tended to?
Yeah, I think that's one of the big problems or big opportunities for Boston. And it always has been. I mean, we've always had people graduate and go somewhere else. there are lots of good initiatives, and we need more to sort of, you know, one, change the visa rules and make it easier for foreign students to get a visa and stay here and work for startups or work for big companies after they graduate. But also just make sure that investors kind of are seeing that young people right out of college can do great things, start really high potential companies. I mean, Facebook and Dropbox are two recent examples. Microsoft was an older one. And so you just got to remember to be willing to take risks with young people.
All right. Well, that's Scott Kirsner. He's the innovation economy columnist at the Boston Globe. You can find a link to his piece in Yankee Magazine about people and deeds that have inspired a nation at RadioBoston.org. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks a lot.
Really appreciate you coming in. That's it for today. Our program is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.